Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer with you on WNYC. Thanks a lot for listening today. Good morning. When President Obama's Deficit Commission chairman released their proposals last week, conservatives grumbled a little bit, but held a lot of their fire. Many liberals, however, howled, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. She and others didn't like the income tax cut for the rich, raising the Social Security age, eliminating the home mortgage tax deduction on Social Security. Some people said even if you've been a physical laborer, you shouldn't have to wait until 69 to retire. They didn't like capping the percentage of the total national economy that could be from government spending. Today, we'll try two approaches on this program to balancing the budget. We'll do the New York Times You Fix the Budget puzzle today. David Leonhard from The Times will be our puzzle master. He's written the accompanying articles, and he will challenge you to win on your own terms. This will be an interactive thing that we'll do in about an hour. But right now, we'll get a progressive approach to closing the gap from Democratic Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky. She is a member of the President's Budget Commission, but is dissenting from the two chairs. She has drawn up her own blueprint and is good enough to join us now. Congresswoman, so nice of you to do this. Welcome to WNYC. Hello from New York.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks for having me.
First, you complained that the chairman's version of balancing the budget was too hard on the middle class. I mentioned a few objections that I've heard from various Democrats. What were some of the things you most objected to?
Well, I objected very much to increasing the out-of-pocket payments that seniors would have for Medicare. Older Americans are already spending about 30% of their out-of-pocket money on health care, and this would increase that. And I did object to their plan for solvency for Social Security. Let's remember, even the chairman's proposal acknowledges Social Security has nothing to do with the deficit. Nonetheless, they were looking for 75-year solvency by changing the way we calculate the cost of living adjustment in a way that would hurt older Americans, even current beneficiaries, and raising the retirement age when we have all the data that shows that low-income people don't live longer. They haven't succeeded in increasing longevity for older people. So that was among that. But the philosophy, Brian, is very different. You know, we talk about shared sacrifice. Well, there hasn't been shared sacrifice in our country right now. The middle-income and lower-income people have not seen their income increase. And all of the growth in wealth has gone to the very wealthiest already in our country. And so I think that we can do it in a way that doesn't hurt the middle-class or lower-class people, and that's what my proposal does.
On Social Security and what you just said, can you tweak the retirement age by job category or even demographics? For example, a physical laborer probably, in all fairness, should be allowed to retire younger than a banker. Blacks live considerably shorter on average than whites. It doesn't mean an individual will, but can you take things like that into account ever in federal policy?
You know, imagine the bureaucracy that it would take to figure out how to do that. Right now, it takes over 400 days to adjudicate a single disability claim under Social Security. Are we now going to have a bureaucracy that says, oh, yeah, well, let's see, you were a retail worker and you were on your feet and you did that for 10 years, but then you became a lawyer, and so, you know, we think it's ridiculous. We should not mess with the retirement age. There are plenty of ways, you use the word tweak, to tweak that would, I think, be much simpler and I think fairer as well. For example, what I say is let's raise the income on who pays into the Social Security tax. And for people above that level, I have a modest what we call legacy tax They pay maybe 3% of their income or whatever we decide to set it at to create the solvency for 7 years. And older people live longer, so it makes sense for them to pay more.
By the way,
richer people live longer.
Right. By the way, when you say that Social Security doesn't contribute to the deficit, I mean it's not projected to take in as much as it will pay out to the baby boomers. And in David Leonhardt's New York Times, You Fix the Budget Puzzle, which we'll be doing with him next hour, he's got a quarter of a $1 trillion savings box that people can choose for raising the retirement age to 70.
You know, I didn't like his proposal because he has on one side what we can do to cut Social Security, but then on the other side, he has how we can raise more revenue. And people don't understand that that's really the same thing. And in fact, when there was a big study by a number of foundations bringing in people all over the country, people said they'd rather pay more then see Social Security benefits cut. We do not need to cut Social Security benefits. Now, when I say deficit, in the short term, Social Security is generating a huge surplus, $2.5 trillion right now, going up to $4 trillion. And it is true that in 2037, it's going to pay out more than it's taking in if we're to maintain benefits. So we have time to figure out a simple way, and I think it comes from more revenue, not from cutting older people who make an average right now, including everything, pensions and savings and investments, $18,000 a year. And the average benefit is $14,000 for everyone that's retired and only $12,000 for women. So we're talking about very modest benefits right now, and to cut them further, I think, is really a disservice to our country and to certainly to older people.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We're talking with Democratic Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky of Illinois. She is a member of President Obama's Budget Commission, but is out with kind of a progressive alternative to the blueprint that the two commission chairs released a couple of weeks ago. We can take a few phone calls for her, and let's do it right on this point. Those of you who consider yourselves politically progressive, how about any of your progressive ideas for eliminating the deficit, for balancing the budget in the long term? Let's assume that you're for letting the Bush tax cuts expire on the wealthy. Let's assume that one so we don't go over very well-trod ground on this show. And any other, we want you to call in with any other progressive ideas that you consider progressive ideas for closing the deficits. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Congresswoman Schakowsky. And overall, you talk about revenue raisers versus cuts. You have a different ratio of tax hikes to spending cuts compared to the chairman.
Right. Mine is about 60-40 revenue to spending cuts.
What's theirs?
I was shocked to find, well, what Erskine Bowles said, one of the co-chairs of the commission, that it was between 70-75% cuts and then 25-30% increases in revenue. Well, you know, the cuts come from things like military pay and military benefits, freezing the pay for all federal employees when 500,000 federal employees make under $50,000 a year. This is definitely not spread around the economy and does precious little to affect those people who have enjoyed prosperity. You know, we should talk not just about shared sacrifice, but how about shared prosperity?
So it looks to me like some of your biggest revenue raisers are, in addition to ending the Bush tax cuts for the top 2%, what you call progressive changes to the estate tax worth $144 billion, closing tax subsidies for companies that ship American jobs overseas as well. Do I have your biggest ticket items there?
Well, actually, one of the biggest is that I treat dividends and capital gains income as and capital gains tax as ordinary income. And so,
they're taxed at the same rate, not a lower rate.
They're taxed at a higher rate.
Yeah, so that they I'm sorry?
Capital gains and dividends that coupon clippers make, that richer people make, because they make those kinds of investments and have those kinds of income, they would be taxed at the ordinary rate, which means that they would be taxed at a higher rate instead of the lower rate currently given to those individuals, and they're usually the wealthy individuals.
And what are these subsidies for companies that ship jobs overseas?
Well, there are we've cut some of them, but it has to do with the kind of tax treatment that is given to them, and there continue to be a number of those that I'm flipping through my proposal right now and looking at. Close dividend loophole for foreign source income. Close active financing tax deferral for financial firms. We went through the whole list of tax expenditures. Some of them are kind of complicated, but they encourage firms to make investments overseas and avoid paying taxes in the United States.
Pat in Hunterdon County, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I love the conversation. I'm concerned about a couple things with Social Security, since I don't have much of a pension, nor does my husband. We really rely on that in our future. And I was wondering why they haven't raised, it seems, in a while, the withholding for Social Security taxes on higher-income people. I think it stops under 110 or 103. And the other thing is, if they were going to fiddle with it, the part that always annoys me is the part where I'm a kind of going to be a wash through for the drug companies, that the money that I would get for, say, the drug part of it in Medicare would go, you know, really is sort of channeled toward drug companies rather than me being able to have that money.
Great. Thank you. Well, yes, we do increase the level that people pay into Social Security. We cover 90% of aggregate income. That would mean right now it's about 106,000. You're right. It would go up right now to about, or by 2015, to about 186,000, maybe even higher. But then, as I said, even people that pay that make more than that would pay what we call a legacy tax, a certain proportion of their income into that. Regarding the drug companies, you are absolutely right. And one of the things in my plan would be to let Medicare negotiate with the drug companies for lower prices, like the Veterans Administration does, and as a consequence, the cost of drugs under the VA is much lower, a fraction of the cost.
You know, the other independent budget commission, the Rivlin-Domenici Commission, also bipartisan, included raising that payroll tax for Social Security cap after a one-year suspension of Social Security payroll taxes altogether that they say would contribute to the creation of millions of jobs next year, 2011, because we need to stimulate now, even though we need to save later. What do you think about that idea? Eliminate the payroll tax for the next year.
Well, I certainly think the notion of stimulating the economy, that is, not enacting cuts so soon that it would actually make a fragile recovery go backwards, and even a double-dip recession. So that's certainly one proposal that I'd consider. I raised an extra $200 billion that I say needs to go into investments before we stop chopping at the budget. So it is absolutely important to recognize that making cuts right now is very dangerous for our economy. It really could lead us into a double dip recession.
What would you do to save money on Medicare? That's the much bigger problem than Social Security over the longer term. The chairman's version has been criticized for not being very specific. The New York Times budget puzzle, which is a more long-term looking thing, trying to save about $1.5 trillion altogether. A full $500 billion, they say, could be saved over the next 20 years by capping the growth in Medicare spending at 1% more than GDP. Now, that might sound kind of technical to most people, but it's more modest growth in Medicare. And that $500 billion savings figure indicates what a huge portion of the deficit problem Medicare is. So what would you do?
Well, first of all, it is not feasible to look just at the public programs, Medicare and Medicaid, because so much of what we do is based on the total health care expenditures, what the private sector is doing. So if we just look at Medicare and Medicaid, of course, we cut those programs. But under Medicare, you get prescription drugs, as your last caller said. And if they're allowed to continue to raise their costs as much as they do, if doctors say that they're not going to take Medicare patients, then we really influence access. And we make our, you know, we ruin all the things that we've tried to do over 18 months in the new health care bill, which the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, estimates over 20 years would save $1.1 trillion. So that's certainly a start. Let's implement all of the Affordable Care Act, the new health care bill. But I suggest putting back a robust public option into the health care plan. That would bring health care costs down.
And the chairman recommended that, too. That hasn't gotten much publicity. I was surprised to see that. They said bring back the public option.
No, they actually didn't. It was kind of if all else fails, then you ought to consider a robust public option. I put it right in the middle of the plan. I was glad to see it was acknowledged as an opportunity, but it wasn't required. You know, having Medicare negotiate with the drug companies we don't know. All of this hasn't been scored.
Mm-hmm.
But one other thing that I didn't put in my plan because we don't have the numbers for it. You know, we don't have a particularly efficient system. It costs about $80,000 for every infection at the hospital. And you know how many there are across the country?
Mm.
If you start multiplying that out by 100,000 more, perhaps, of infections that occur there, if we make our system more efficient, I think that we'll be able to save a good deal of money.
We're almost out of time with Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky of Illinois on her progressive alternative to closing the deficit gap. And we're taking your progressive suggestions, that fit your progressive politics, liberal politics, call it whatever you want, from that side of the spectrum for today. Post them on our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We'll take one more on the phone here, and that is from Sarah in Flatbush. Hi, Sarah. You're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to ask a question. Why aren't we talking about waste in the military budget, particularly in the use of contracting in Iraq and Afghanistan? That topic seems completely off the table, and it represents a big portion of our overall national budget.
How much?
Actually, that's a huge part of my plan. I take $110 billion out of the defense budget. About 25% of my total plan deals with defense. And again, it's not from taking it away from our uniformed military, our soldiers, but it's looking at these contractors, a big part of this. I've been really drilling down on the use of contractors over the last several years in Congress. But also, there's all these old Cold War weapon systems that we continue to spend billions of dollars on. Defense contractors in general, are very resistant to any cuts in the defense budget, but that's really where the big money is when you talk about discretionary spending. So that's a big part of it, and I agree with you.
So we're just about out of time. We've gone through some of the highlights of your progressive alternative to the deficit reduction plan of the chairman of your commission, the president's bipartisan deficit commission. You're all supposed to try and vote on a plan in about 2 weeks, and you need 14 out of the 18 of you to put a plan out there officially to Congress. Do you see likely compromises between your plan and their plan to get to yes?
I think that it's going to be very hard to come to an agreement that's comprehensive by 14 people, not just because of the progressive side, because I think the more the Republicans, the right-leaning members, are not interested in revenue increases. And so, I don't see how we get from here to there, but we do have a couple more weeks. The staff is working, and members are continuing to contribute. So we may be able to come. Regardless, I think our work has been constructive in laying out many things that the Congress can consider about how we reduce our debt and our deficit, which everyone agrees, progressives and otherwise, is a serious problem.
What would it mean for the country, though, if the president convenes this bipartisan commission, gives you about a year to do the job on this huge problem, long-term as well as short-term for the country, as you say, and then you come back in December, deadlocked, no solution?
No, I think that there will be, at the very least, a list of suggestions that we'll come up with. But and of course, it wasn't even a year. It was a very short period that we had to do all this. But I think that it will be a constructive exercise that will point the direction of how we can make some important changes. And I think that there will be a considerable number of things that we can agree on.
Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, Democrat from Illinois, we really appreciate you coming on New York Public Radio with us. Thanks a lot.
Brian, thanks so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Up next, Wayne Barrett from The Village Voice on the lobbyists waiting in wait for Andrew Cuomo, lying in wait for Andrew Cuomo. He will also handicap Kathy Black's chances of getting her school's chancellor no experience waiver. Stay with us.